Welcome to another Rick and Rob Sports Show. I'm Robert Laidlaw.
And I'm Rick Drewer. Welcome back, Robert. I believe you've been on a world tour for the last 3 weeks or so.
Well, not quite world tour, but through Europe.
Oh, what parts of Europe have you been to? Tell us a bit about it.
Well, it's all from London down up to Amsterdam, through Venice, Rome, Paris, Switzerland, back to London, and then home again.
Gee whiz, we should have really started the show with Lucky Stars. I've been everywhere, shouldn't we?
Yeah, we could have almost been, although I'm back home in the best place now.
Well, it's true. I guess one of the beauties of you being on your little sojourn is that you realise that Australia is the best place to live in.
Absolutely, but it did open my eyes a little bit because Australians are well known for their sporting culture, but right through Europe I noticed how sport infiltrates the culture of all the different countries over there.
Well, it certainly does, and I guess it's true no matter whether we're on the European continent or South America or America, sport seems to be everywhere, and you've only got to look at the way the Chinese have got themselves involved in sport recently or to a greater degree. It really is a significant part of everybody's way of life, I think.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, that was quite good when Port Adelaide got the sponsorship with China, and I suppose they responded in a positive way on the weekend.
Well, that's right. There are many ways to get to China, and digging a hole is one of them.
Of course, they lost by 86 points in Canberra. But anyway, getting back to the tour, sort of, we went to sort of London first, and then our first point of call where we stopped at was Amsterdam. And the one thing that struck me about Amsterdam, other than the canals, was the number of push bikes. There was bicycles absolutely everywhere, thousands and thousands and thousands. And on the roads where the cars and buses travel, there's extra lanes for push bikes. And whereas people think you take your life in your own hands when you cross where there's cars, no, that's easy. The push bikes, you got to watch out for them.
Well, if we're going to try and look after bikes in this country and in this state in particular, if only we did have proper designated bike lanes which weren't just an appendage to a roadway, then safety would come into view. But moving bikes onto the footpath as we now allow them and to ride at any speed you like, is we just haven't learnt from the right way of doing it as they do in Amsterdam.
One thing about Amsterdam, they definitely can't ride on the footpath because they're all cobblestones.
Well, maybe we should dig ours up and try the same then.
Now, the one thing that that struck me in all the countries that was visited was the proudness they have for their Olympic Games where they held Olympics. But the one thing about Amsterdam is I didn't realise that they held the 1928 Olympics, but you wouldn't know it from talking to anyone there.
No, I certainly didn't. I wasn't aware of that.
But going on, after Amsterdam, we came down and we went through Germany. We went to a place called Heidelberg, which was a beautiful little town, and it's got colourful houses on the river there and a big castle up the top. And there was no sporting sort of feel at all when we went there. But on the way to Austria, we stopped at a place called Munich, where, of course, they held the Olympic Games in 1972, which of course were marred by the massacre, and of course Mark Spitz got the 7 gold medal for swimming for the USA.
Well, I've actually been to Munich as well and can claim to actually have had lunch in the revolving tower that was built for the communications for the Olympics, and I can very clearly remember them looking down on the Olympic soccer sports field and them bulldozing the snow and ice off in preparation for playing the game.
Gee, there's something amazing about that building you're talking about. The organisation that built that for the Olympics built it so that then they could take it over for their business afterwards.
Yes, they plan ahead, the Germans. There's no doubt about that. It was a very impressive visit that I had there.
Of course, a big sport over there seems to be Formula One, and everywhere you go, there's posters and there's advertising about the Formula One. And Rick, I even picked up this little magazine on Formula One, and with your reading ability, there is plenty of pictures there, mate.
Well, Robert Onbury, I thank you very much for this wonderful little booklet on Formula One racing in Germany. It's a pity I can't read one word of it since it's all in German, but thank heavens, as you've said, there are some pictures that I can look at anyway. Oh, I can read Red Bull Racing.
No, I thought you'd appreciate that, Rick. So getting on, we headed for Innsbruck in Austria. And, of course, the thing that strikes you there is the snow and the mountains and the Alps and everything like that. But we drove past and they showed us the actual ski jump where they all sort of come down. That's still there. And they told us a story about how they set it up, and they had the 1964 Winter Olympics where an Australian, Ross Milne, who was a alpine skier, 5 days before the Olympics, he actually died tragically in a training incident there.
Oh, I wasn't aware of that. What a shocking incident to have occurred.
Yes, it was. It was really bad. There was a couple others there, but the safety measures that they have today wouldn't allow that type of incident to occur again.
Well, it's just as well. You wouldn't get me going down one of those chutes.
No. And, of course, Denver had the 1976 Winter Olympics, but they withdrew, and Innsbruck sort of won those Olympics as well, so they've had two Winter Olympics there.
Well, I suppose when you've already got the infrastructure and there's a bit of an emergency occurs, then you sort of retreat to somewhere where basically they're almost ready to go.
Now, with a sporting mind and an eye for sports, I notice a lot of these types of things when we're going through Europe, but we went to Venice next, and of course they have the gondolas, and there's a very slow-paced life. There's no sporting connotation there at all because everyone's has their siestas, and it's a really slow pace. And I suppose as sports-minded people, you need that sometimes.
Well, it sounds like a very good idea to me, a siesta in the afternoon before doing a 40k paddle or something like that.
No, it was. It was a wonderful little place, and yeah, I really enjoyed that. Next, of course, was Rome. Now, Rome had the Olympics in 1960, and that's when Cassius Clay won the light heavyweight gold. And of course, he changed his name to Muhammad Ali and became one of the iconic sports figures of the 20th century.
Float like a butterfly and sting like a bee.
Ouch. And then, of course, Herb Elliott won the 1500, and I believe Dawn Fraser was sort of involved in the middle of her swimming trifecta of 100-metre gold medals.
She was indeed. Mentioning Herb Elliott, I was very lucky enough as a schoolboy to have Percy Cerutti, who was Herb Elliott's coach, visit our school. And be it for good or bad, he had a huge influence on my life in training methods and what I made my mother cook for me and eat and so forth, raw oats and all that sort of stuff. He was a major influence, and of course Herb Elliott remained unbeaten throughout the whole of his career.
Yeah, wonderful Australian, absolutely. And you can speak with Muhammad Ali and Herb Elliott in the same breath, because they're both champion sports people.
Absolutely correct.
But of course in Rome, the Colosseum is the iconic status of the place. Everyone wants to be at the Colosseum, and visiting that was a true highlight of the whole tour. And to see the Colosseum, which was a Flavian amphitheatre, that was constructed in the AD 72 to AD 80, and it held up to 80,000 people. And the one thing that struck me about the place is it reminded me of the MCG.
Actually, it's interesting you say that, because I've visited there as well, and I can see how you could come about that. It is just an amazing structure, and to think that it was built so long ago and with such vision is quite remarkable.
Yeah, it was a true highlight, and of course I used to have the gladiators contests and the public spectacles, and none of that would happen today, but in 100 years' time, perhaps our footy, they'll talk about it the same way.
Well, there's nothing like a good blood sport, is there, really?
No, it was absolutely magnificent. And, you know, when you talk about the Colosseum and you talk about how iconic Rome was, and the one thing I will say about Rome is their water, their tap water, tastes better than our spring water.
Well, I think it's because of the aquifers they've got. And I guess it's the most pure and natural way of filtering water, and the result is A-grade.
Modern technology?
Very modern technology.
2,000 years ago they put that in place, so that was they were well ahead of their time, the Romans.
Very, very, very true.
Now, when you talk about the Colosseum being Rome, of course, when you look at Paris, which was one of the next stops, the Eiffel Tower.
Yep, did you go up it?
Absolutely. It's just a beautiful structure, and no matter how many photos you take of the place, you can never capture its magnificence.
Very true. I'm not a great heights man, and I did go up it, but I was very, very nervous as I approached the top. I'm not too good on a ladder either.
No, it was just, you know, when I first got to Paris, and, you know, everyone raves about Paris, and I wasn't as impressed as what I should have been, but once I hit the Eiffel Tower and went up to that the second level and sort of looked out, it was one of the most magnificent views I've seen in my life.
It is stunning, absolutely stunning.
Now, of course, Paris held the Olympics in 1900 and 1924, and there's sort of a lot of the remnants of that sort of in the city. The interesting thing for me is near the Australian Embassy, which is 400 metres from the Eiffel Tower, they had this playing field that was encompassed and they were practising rugby. But it was interesting that the way they were practising it reminded me of how we practised football back in the 1970s.
Well, that's interesting. I was going to say that the French, despite their sort of low profile, are actually very much a sporting nation, and of course feature very much in rugby and world soccer, and they've produced the odd good tennis player or two as well. So it's interesting you think their training methods, perhaps that's why they can't get near the All Blacks.
And the interesting thing in regards to the Eiffel Tower, and of course there's the Moulin Rouge and the Tour of France. It's a very famous cycling race.
It's a very famous cycling race, somewhat colourful in the controversy over Lance Armstrong and his victories year after year and the resultant drug finding. And it is of some concern, I think, that world cycling seems to be the sport associated most heavily with performance-enhancing drugs, but let's hope they've cleaned it up. But the Tour de France is the Tour de France, and it will always be famous and looked at as being the classic bike race of the year, every year.
And obviously, driving through the countryside and seeing some of the spectacular scenery that they go through with the Tour, it's just magnificent.
It is. And, I mean, I guess we have our own little version of it with the Tour Down Under and the exposure, in our case, that the surrounds of Adelaide, the Barossa and the beaches and so forth gets. It has to do an area which holds a significant bike race. Now that we have the television coverage that we have, it must do the world of good.
Now, perhaps within Europe, visiting all these places, you know, great place to visit, but there's only one place I could ever live in, and that would be in Switzerland, in Lucerne, where we visited on our tour. It's just an absolute beautiful place, but I couldn't live there because I wouldn't be able to afford the food. It was the most expensive place to buy food in all of Europe that we come across, but it's just so beautiful. We did a cruise on the lake there, and we went to a farm and did a horse and cart sort of ride, which was fantastic. But the best thing of all was going up to Mount Rigi in the Swiss Alps. And we went up there on a railway, which was the first cogwheel railway in Europe. And it's just a fantastic experience. And you see the snow getting heavier and heavier as you go further up. And of course, their sporting adventure there would be their skiing and their snow fights.
Well, you're a very fortunate man. I haven't actually been to Lucerne. The closest I would have got to, and I consider it to be one of the most beautiful places that I've ever visited, was Salzburg in Austria. And I was there during the winter, and the snow, etc., was just absolutely magnificent as well. So were the beer halls, by the way.
Yeah, and I remember sort of it was interesting that my sand shoes had got wet. And when we went up there, I actually wore some sandals without socks on, and everyone laughed at me and said that you're going to freeze up there, but no, I didn't. My circulation must be pretty good, but to sort of get that snow and make a snowball and thaw it, it was it's a different feeling to anything I've experienced in Australia.
Well, I think the explanation would be your level of fitness that got you through that intrepid time.
Thank you for that, Rick, and I'll take that for what it's worth. And interesting how we got down the mountain is we went to down by cable car and they lurched a couple of times. It reminded me of the old days at the Royal Show with the Mad Mouse.
Oh, heavens, I've nearly forgotten the Mad Mouse. Yes, I'm. As I said, I'm not too good on heights, so I'm not a great user of those pieces of machinery, but I can understand what you mean.
And, of course, a big sport there is hiking. There's a lot of people there. They just hike up the mountains there, and it's sort of a different sporting culture.
Well, I guess it's because of the geography of the place, and so it should be. We are unfortunate, I guess, in many ways. Not about the only thing we haven't got in this country are extensive high mountains in lots of places. I mean, we've got some ranges on the east coast, but hiking in South Australia is mainly on the flat.
Now, it's interesting, so many of these places held Olympics, and my last stop before I headed home was back to London, and of course they held Olympics recently in 2012, and of course they had them in 1908 and 1948, so they're really sort of part of the Olympic family, sort of more so than anyone.
Well, they are, and I think sometimes we tend to forget how much the United Kingdom, England, Wales, Scotland, etc., Ireland, have contributed to sport and, indeed I say, the creation of many sports. Maybe they're looked upon as being Commonwealth-type sports now in terms of not having spread necessarily worldwide. I guess a good example of that is netball. But their significance is amazing. Unfortunately, sometimes people laugh at they invented these sports but now can't play them very successfully.
Now, on the last day that I had in London, I really wanted to see if I could see a soccer game, but there wasn't any soccer in London on the day. There was out at Sunderland, which is too far to go, and of course I'm a Sunderland supporter, it would have been good, but so we missed out on that, but went for a walk from the hotel. I thought I'd visit the zoo, so I walked up there, and that's quite close to Lord's, and I thought, oh, it'd be a good place to walk over there, but I made a decision not to because I wasn't sure if it's open or not. It's a 2 mile walk, so I thought I'd walk through a place called Regent Park. And that was absolutely amazing. It was 395 acres. It's the largest outdoor sports facility in London. And what I saw spread over the area was about 6 or 7 pickup soccer games, which brought back memories from when I was a kid and you'd have pickup footy games and pickup cricket games. And I stopped and watched the way they played. They didn't have any referees. All they had was one team had yellow and the other team had red, and they went at hammer and tongs, and they all loved it. And, you know, the schools weren't there, but the passion for soccer was there. And it was really interesting to see the London people sort of in their element.
It is. The only thing I've seen similar, I'm not sure whether it might be slightly more structured in Adelaide, is driving through the centre of Adelaide, University Oval and the parks there. And quite often on Sunday afternoons, you'll see many of our African friends playing what seemingly are friendly soccer games. And it's lovely to see that sort of activity.
Absolutely. And then back to Australia and back to the real world. And that ends today's show. Thank you very much. It's a Rick and Rob Sports Show. I'm Robert Laidlaw.
And I'm Rick Drewer.